Today we have Keith Singery with us, founder of the BitTensor Guru podcast, the BitTensor Guru validator, and recently cellular automata subnet. I'm not sure if I'm saying that correctly, but Keith, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. It's cellular automata, but we just, even our dev group, we just call it CA so that we don't have to say that every time.
Okay. Automata. That's right. Okay. Well, Keith, you know, you've been in the BitTensor ecosystem for a long time. I think just a good place to start would be, you know, what is BitTensor to you? Why is it interesting? Yeah. And why did you start diving in?
Yeah, I actually just threw a post up about this yesterday, but the, you know, initially when I got involved in this project, it was to, you know, kind of fund this alternative track, this alternative future away from centralized artificial intelligence. You know, OpenAI was founded under this directive. That's why it's called OpenAI, of having, you know, free and open access to the intelligence and the models and everything like that. And just like almost everything on this planet, at some point it gets, you know, co-opted by the corporate machine and gets folded into the same old structures that, you know, everything else does. So BitTensor has been, you know, able to avoid that up until this point. And, you know, back 2 years ago when I found the project, that was really kind of what we were excited about in the small group that kind of got involved at that stage, is that we were able to put our efforts and, you know, the little bit of money that we had at the time to kind of push this directive and push this narrative in a different direction than handing over the keys to some of these corporate interests in the one of the most powerful, you know, developments of technology. People put it right up there with the, you know, the wheel, fire, the printing press, the internet itself, you know, electricity, right? Artificial intelligence is going to have impact equivalent or even greater than some of those things. And so that's how I got involved initially.
Got it. And how, you know, a lot of these crypto communities, it's less about how the technology is at any given stage and more about the community around that technology and the values of that community. How have you seen BitTensor change since you first joined the project? You know, I guess both from like a cultural perspective and from a technology perspective.
Yeah, like from a cultural perspective, in the early days, it was kind of, you know, you hear about these projects where like it's all kumbaya, everyone's holding hands going towards this main goal. And that's really what it was. Like we had probably 30 guys on one validator in the beginning, and we were like the second or third largest validator. We had a huge percentage of the stake, and everybody just sent their tau to this guy's cold key. Nobody even met him before. So this guy has like, you know, back when there's only a couple million tau in the ecosystem, this guy has like a couple hundred thousand tau on his validator. And I don't even know like what country he's from. And this was kind of the beauty of the trust that was involved in those early days. And the Discord was really open about sharing, you know, strategies for mining, validating, this type of stuff. Eventually, you know, when the network evolved a little bit and we all kind of wised up at the opportunity and the amount of, you know, risk that was being placed on one single person, we all kind of split off and began validating on our own. Also, then when this kind of trustless mechanism of staking your tau to these different validators was introduced, that mitigated any kind of risk of having to have someone hold your tau to validate for you. But the network has sort of moved back in the other direction. So there was like, in the beginning, it was like a few bigger validators, and then it kind of expanded into many validators. And now it's sort of centralized again. And the reason for that is that as a larger validator in the ecosystem, it's much easier to perform validating on each of the subnets, because the miners that operate there are really encouraged to communicate and participate with the larger validators. Whereas if you're a smaller validator, you have a much harder time. The competition also, you know, mostly because back in the early days, it's like you're throwing tokens around that aren't worth very much. But now when you're up in the several hundred dollar range for tau, the projects, you know, in the couple billion range for market cap, the competition and the knowledge sharing on the mining side isn't as, you know, isn't as friendly anymore in the Discord. It's still pretty easy to get started on some of these subnets, especially the ones that don't have very much emissions or are newly launched or something like that. But compared to the early days, it's a lot more cutthroat, you know. And this is something actually, as someone who's been in the project for 2 years, you know, we were always kind of hoping for this day, because this project, BitTensor, was bootstrapped by, you know, essentially crypto Twitter. And yes, there were some larger investors, you know, like Foundry or whatever early on that picked up a couple hundred thousand tau. But mainly the people that were behind pushing this project to the point where it is today were not your AI and ML engineers that are involved on launching subnets today, like Noose Research. It was just people that were really early that were carrying over this, this, you know, sort of, you know, Bitcoin-esque ideas into the decentralized AI space. And that carried us all the way to, you know, about 6 months ago when we launched subnets, which then, you know, spiked the price and started attracting in the talent that ended up pushing us all towards the exit of the ecosystem, which has in turn improved the ecosystem. And this, hopefully this turnstile will continue, and the talent, you know, involved in this project as the price increases will continue to go up.
Yeah, I think you hit on a couple really interesting things there. The first is that this isn't a static project, right? So you can't just look at, you know, oh, the technology is how it is right now, and that's how it's going to be. Like you said, when you were first getting involved, there wasn't even the concept of delegating within the protocol. You had to just trust somebody and give them your tau to validate. And obviously that's changed, right? And so there are things currently that need to be improved both at the protocol level and at the subnet level. And then the other thing that you kind of touched on was the specialization, I think, of validators. Can you kind of touch on the validator role today and where you think validators' role will be in the future? Like, what's the value that validators really will provide?
Yeah, the position of a validator in the BitTensor ecosystem is a little bit more unique than what you might think of just like verifying transactions on a typical blockchain project. Validators are, you know, essentially using the software that is designed by the subnet owners to evaluate and score the distilled intelligence or the information coming out of the miners that operate on each of the subnets. And for performing this role, you need to have about 20,000 tau to even get recognized as a validator by the various miners across the subnets. But the value of a validator in the BitTensor ecosystem really comes down into accessing the intelligence of the miners, because miners are trying to run, you know, the most efficient, you know, basically job possible, whether it's through the software that they're using or the hardware they're using, how they have set up their network of their different miners, to basically like increase the throughput that miner is able to contribute to getting the highest score in the validation process so that they can earn the most tau. That's the whole point of being a miner. And they don't communicate with IP addresses that aren't validators, because there's no incentive to do so. So when you go onto a site like Corcel.io that runs through the subnets 18 and 19, so Cortex.T and the Vision subnet, both run by Mog Machine. If you use that front end, what you're doing is communicating to the miners who have APIs plugged into, you know, OpenAI, Anthropic, whatever, and also now with an update to Vision that just came out, S19, subnet 19 that just came out yesterday, open source models that are actually being run on these miners. You're plugging into the miners themselves through the validator. So this is why, when you're wondering, like, why are all these large validators not dumping their tau on the market when they've got, you know, a couple hundred million, you know, in USD equivalent? It's because they believe the access to the miners, the thousands of miners that are operating across the BitTensor ecosystem, will eventually be worth more than selling their tau. And there is no other way for you to build a front end that creates access to the miners other than to create this throughput or this relationships with the validators themselves. Because like I mentioned, the incentive mechanism creates an environment where the miners will only talk to validators. So that's how validating works. And actually, you know, just to give a little bit more insight into that, as a validator, I run right now on 28 or 29 subnets. There's 32 slots. Not every single one is live. The last four or five subnets, especially in the last like 2 weeks or so, have just been like a wood chipper. You know, there's been like seven or eight registrations in that time. The price of a subnet registration is recently up to like 700 something tau. It's almost $500,000. Every time someone comes in and registers a subnet, they boot out the weakest subnet or the subnet with the lowest emissions. So as a validator, what I'm doing is monitoring all of these subnets. I'm spinning up my servers, my validation servers that are either run on GPUs or CPUs. And I run everything in the cloud, so I don't own any of my own hardware. And I right now, like on the 28, 29 subnets that I run, I have like 35 different servers that are operating. Some subnets require multiple servers. About half of those are GPUs, the other half are CPUs. And my job as a validator is essentially to keep those up and running, keep pace with the software that's coming out from the subnets, make sure I'm registered, make sure I, you know, spin up new machines for additional subnets that are created, you know, shut down my machines for subnets that go out of business. Or if I've got, you know, any kind of a number of technical issues from network uptime to, you know, a cloud provider downtime that can enter my subtensors, which is a link to the blockchain part of BitTensor. So as a validator, what you're doing is you're balancing, you're keeping all of these plates spinning in order to keep the communication open and clean with the miners on the network and in the 32 different subnets.
We were on with Arash from SN8 a couple of weeks ago, and he compared running a subnet to running a company, running a startup. I'd love to get like your perspective, you know, as a validator, as to like what it's like to be dealing with the different owners of the subnets and your own transition into, you know, sort of running your own subnet now.
Yeah, like it's a bigger validator. So we have like 400 something thousand tau on our validator. It's like 7.5% of the network. Subnet owners are incentivized to maintain a good relationship with, validators like myself, because the way the network is constructed today, we set the emissions for those subnets. So that's the nice thing about being a large validator is you get a little bit of like white glove or, you know, kid glove attention from some of these subnet owners. And for me, with someone that doesn't have a lot of coding experience, you know, I've got like ChatGPT on my side to help me get there with Python. But sometimes I need a little hand holding from the subnet owners. So that's nice to have. If I was to compare like what validating is to maybe like something in the real world, it's almost like farming or something, because but it's like the timeline is like much faster than like watching your crops grow, because you're constantly going out there and like, you know, watering it with more horsepower from a CPU or GPU perspective. If you have to like add more, you may have to add more like network bandwidth, you might have to add another machine, you have to like shut down a machine, but you might have to like fertilize it with some more tau. You know, there's like all kinds of different comparisons we could draw, but it's constantly just juggling and keeping all the balls in the air to make sure your emissions are high enough that they garner the support of the in our case the 800 and something wallets that choose to put their tau with our validator. In addition to that, you're always trying to keep an eye on what the subnets are doing. So if a subnet has, you know, a solid team, they're developing a front end to increase the reach of BitTensor, they've got auto update implemented, so that makes my job of running the validator better. Maybe they've got a very diverse pool of miners participating. So each subnet right now is 256 slots, with the exception of subnet number one. That means there's a couple hundred different miners. Those miners can be distributed across, you know, like 50% of the miners could be on a single IP address. That's a problem, right? That's a cabal that's going on. So if I see that happening, I know the subnet has been like taken over by a nefarious entity on the mining side. And I'm kind of like, you know, looking at all of these different health metrics, you know, trying to keep my fingers on the pulse of the subnet. And then I take that information, compare it to the other 29, 30 subnets that are running, and then determine where I'm going to put my weight based on that. And that's really one of the most important things beyond just making sure your emissions are high because you've got good servers, the right connectivity, and the right software running. You're also, as a validator at this stage in BitTensor's development, required for ushering in the development of the project itself across these 32 subnets by supporting each subnets, by supporting the right subnets, essentially. So that's the most important thing. As a subnet owner, you have to, if you're going to come into this ecosystem now and you're going to lock up $400,000 US dollars worth of TAU to get a slot, there's a few things like you have to get right first. First, you need to be like, you need to have like launch ready code. You know, you need to be up at like I talked to a couple companies this week, actually, like that are already active in the AI space, and they already have subnets that are up and running on the test network. People don't even know that they're developing and running them yet. So that when they get their subnet slot, they're going to have like a battle tested, you know, GitHub repository that they've been working themselves to perfect, because at this point you only have 11 days when you register a new subnet of basically an immunity period where you can't get tossed back in this wood chipper and replaced by a different subnet. So when you do spin up a subnet, you have to be ready to go. You have to have your code ready for miners. You have to have your validator software stable enough to garner the emissions from people like myself so that we're confident in what you're building. You have to have some sort of business case or ramp for creating value for the BitTensor ecosystem, whether that's through bringing in, you know, new end users through something like Corcel, or whether that's, you know, creating an open source database, or maybe it's generating, you know, fine-tuned open source models like Subnet 6 or Subnet 9. There's various, you know, different kind of like value propositions that these subnets have. And your challenge as a subnet owner is to not just come up with a white paper that has your vision on it, but also show the participants of the network through your code that you are able to deliver on that. And that's where the real challenge is, because you have to put a team together that not only understands the BitTensor network, has the required like AI ML skills to make your subnet dream a reality, but also delivers something that has value to enough validators on the ecosystem that it keeps you registered.
It's actually, I'm curious about the two things that you said. One of them is the wood chipper that I want you to get to eventually, but the other is, you know, you talked about monitoring the health of the subnets. And I'd love for you to dig into like what it looks like to have a really healthy subnet. You know, what are the things that you, when you're looking at it, you say, wow, these, you know, these are the 3, 4, 5 metrics that I really like to see.
Yeah, there's certain like telltale signs, you know, like if you look at a person, you might be like, oh, their skin color's a little off, like they're probably not eating very healthy or something, you know, they don't have that glow to them. Subnet like documentation, it might sound a little crazy to start with that, but if someone is able to communicate through their documentation how to effectively operate on that subnet and what that subnet is doing, that's a very good sign that they understand and that they're putting the effort into the code itself. Like me personally, I'm not going to be going through like 5,000 lines of code and trying to figure out like, does this person, you know, have a bunch of garbage in there? Could they have cleaned it up? Where are they, you know, where they're like, you know, gaps in the security or opportunities for exploit. This is not something I can do, but I can look at the downstream metrics of that and figure out if they're doing a good job. So one would be like, how often, beyond the documentation, how often is your software being updated, and how are you communicating these updates? Like some subnets with auto update running, they don't have to do a lot of communication with you, but the downstream effect of that is nobody knows what they're running. Like it was easier for a few months to kind of just plug in your your VAT when we didn't have a bunch of subnets like we do now. You turn on your validator and you just let it run, and it wasn't really that important what the subnet was doing because the competition wasn't very high because we didn't have 32 subnets at that point, going back to the wood chipper comment. At this point, though, each subnet, at every time they make an update, they're looking to communicate to guys like myself what value that update is bringing. And that is another thing that I always look at, is like, how often are they updated? I look at, like I mentioned, I look at the distribution of the mining, the miners. I don't, you know, the easiest thing for a subnet owner to do is probably spin up miners that run on their own subnet. So if you start seeing miners that are associated with a single cold key, and taustats.io will help you help you see some of this stuff. You can also look at the metagraph by using the BitTensor client, but you can see that there are miners that are all running from either the same IP address or linked to the same cold key. You can look at the distribution of miners itself. Like, some subnets are designed to feed the top miners disproportionately to the rest of the subnet. Like, if you look at subnet 6, for example, and you can look at their, this is the Noose Research subnet. So if you go on to the Hugging Face leaderboard that they have for that, you could see that like the top miner is earning 70 or 80% of the TAU that is being awarded to miners in that subnet, which might seem like a lot of money, but the reason that that's, or like a, like not necessarily a lot of money, but a distribution that's like out of whack, because the next best one is only earning like 5 or 10%. And then the next one's like 3%. And then after the top 5, no one's earning anything. But the way that this subnet is designed is to constantly constantly create better and better fine-tuned open source models under 15 gigabytes. And the king of the hill is the top dog, and everyone is going to take that model and sometimes copy it and then fine tune it better, or take an iteration of it, an earlier iteration, and try to fine tune that in a way that that wins the subnet. So for that subnet, like, it makes a lot of sense that there's a top, that the TAU is top heavy. You know, there's other subnets though, like subnet 18, for example, where like miners are providing API access to, like, for example, OpenAI or Anthropic, some of them go through AWS or Stability. And there's not a lot of difference between like the 50th percentile and the 75th percentile and the 90th percentile as far as like what the miners are contributing. So for there to be like a huge, like a 10x distribution between the top 10% and the middle 50%, for example, that wouldn't be right, you know? So like, that's another thing you want to look at, because you're trying to, as a validator, shepherd kind of the development of not only the subnet, but the participation in the ecosystem itself. Because in order to strengthen BitTensor, you don't just want like good subnets. You also need like a diverse pool of miners that are participating in subnets for a, you know, variety of skill levels. And like, maybe the best ones are able to grab some of those top spots, but there should also be a place for new miners to get in. Another thing you can look at is the subnet registration cost. Like, if you're looking at a subnet and the registration cost is low and the miner turnover is also very low, you know that it's very hard to stay registered in that subnet. Like, because if it doesn't cost you a lot to get in, but no one's trying to get in, like, there must be something going on, you know? So like, you can sort of piece together these sort of stories on how subnets are operating. And as a validator, this is what you really should be doing. And man, I got to tell you, like, that's just like 5 or 6 variables that I look at. There's like 50 more that I should be looking at, and I don't really have the time. And we can get into dynamic TAU if you want to, but the way that this has to move is toward a methodology of doing this, you know, weighting of the various subnets for the emissions on the root network, which is what we do now. That needs to move into the hands of the market itself. It needs to move into a much more pure mechanism that is free of collusion and free of, you know, validators pumping up their own subnets or forming alliances with other validators. So here, let's game this incentive mechanism. I'll give you 30%. You give me 30%. And when we do that, we earn more than if we gave our own validate, our own subnet 60%, you know, this is the type of like backroom deal shit that's possible right now. Definitely happening. Like, you can go look at my weights. You could see I don't do that, but especially right now with my drum I'm banging about weight copying, I equalized all my weights recently. But there are definitely these deals happening in the background, and BitTensor is sort of growing up to the point where you know, the size of the project and the scope of the project necessitates a different methodology for awarding subnets.
I mean, that was all just amazing what you just described, because I think you gave such a great perspective into the different roles on BitTensor, and also talked about how BitTensor is not perfect at all. There, you know, there are checks and balances within the system. The incentives are what they are, and people are going to try to game them, and then other people are going to try to police those bad actors, right? And so that was beautiful. What I also really loved was the different roles of miners on different subnets, right? Not everyone is just doing, you know, AI inference or fine tuning or prediction. You know, every, like, each one of these subnets has a very distinct role, and so it was cool to hear you dig into that with respect to, you know, news research, and then just juxtaposing with subnet 18 Cortex. You mentioned briefly dynamic tau. I think it would be useful to get your perspective on dynamic tau, and, you know, what you think that will affect, you know, in the future.
Yeah, from my perspective, dynamic tau is like taking the training wheels off this project. You know, the first step to like knocking off one training wheel was to introducing subnets themselves. It was like we took the responsibility for developing on the ecosystem and opened it up to the entire community. That happened about 6 months ago. The next thing that needs to happen is we take the responsibility that is currently sitting on the validators, you know, just like OpenTensor had responsibility for the single subnet that was this project for the first like 2 years almost. We need to take that responsibility and hand it off to the community and the holders of tau, and basically democratize it. So the way that dynamic tau will work is that it will use a market mechanism to determine what the emissions are across the various 32 subnets. So just like a quick dirty explanation, is that each subnet will have a, you know, a, almost like the liquidity pool. Nobody earns tau anymore. So all the tau that is earned goes into the subnet pool itself. Then the tau, the subnet token that is earned on each of the individual subnets, the way that that works is that as a miner or a validator, you are earning half of the subnet token. The other half of the subnet token that is earned, you know, each block is going into the subnet pool. Each specific subnet then has a pool of miners and validators that are earning their specific token. And then they've got the opportunity or the chance to either hold that subnet token, or they can convert it to tau. And if they convert it to tau, which you can sell on the open market, because these subnet tokens are essentially locked into the BitTensor ecosystem. Like, people will figure out how to do some, like, you know, market stuff to open it up so you can invest from the outside. But for all intents and purposes, there's no way to get the subnet token directly into US dollars or Bitcoin or stable coins without going through tau first. So whatever's created has to do that. So when you convert as a miner or validator, your subnet token that you're earning to tau, you lower the emissions immediately by an incremental amount on that subnet. It's almost a confidence interval. Nobody knows what's going on these subnets better than the miners. The miners not only are trying to earn tau, but they're trying to do it in the most efficient way possible. Sometimes they're trying to game the system. Sometimes they're coming up with their own code that's even more efficient than the code that the subnet owner has designed. And they alone know, like, at the basic, most truthful level, whether that subnet is doing the right thing. And if they start trading their subnet token for tau, that is an immediate, like, it's like the heartbeat, you know, you could see like the heartbeat, you know, going up on someone, for example, if you know, they're exercising a little too hard. If you see the subnets that are going, that are having a lot of flow of their subnet token into the pool, you know that something's up. Like the miners are dumping. Why are they doing that? Do they not believe in the subnet? Has the subnet been compromised? Is someone taking it over? Like the same thing on the validating side. Validators on the subnet also earn the subnet token. And the validators then are always, they're the second people to know basically what's going on with the subnet. Because if the subnet's running properly, you have some sort of mechanism to use the access and the intelligence on the miners through the validators. The easiest example again would be like Corcel. If Corcel starts spitting, you know, very low quality content out through the validator, then at the front end, you know that something is wrong, like between the miner and between the front. So as a validator, if you see that happening and you lose confidence, maybe you start to sell some subnet token. If you're doing that on your subnet at a higher rate compared to the other subnets, which are all operating in the same way, your subnet in comparison to the others will lose emissions. The other side basically of that coin is that, you know, right now we've got 6 million plus or something tau out there, right, in the wild that's been distributed at this point over the last couple of years. We're a little more than halfway to the halving. And that tau now, in order to operate on those subnets, has to convert their tau to the subnet token. So for me, like as a validator, if I want to run there, I have to take my tau and commit to running on that subnet by putting my tau in that subnet pool. And what I get out of that is subnet token. The difference between that and today then, and the reason why this mechanism is beautiful is because today I'm like a 400,000 tau gorilla on every subnet, you know, and my weight is applied equally. I don't have to commit to anything. I can run on one, not run on another, but I'm the same size everywhere. In the future with dynamic tau, because you have to buy into the subnet token to validate there, or as a delegator, you have to buy into the subnet token to delegate or to, you know, stake your tau with a validator, you have to take a risk on that subnet. And if I do that for subnet number one, that subnet token, the weight that I buy into subnet number one doesn't apply to 2, 3, 4, all the way up to 32. So I have to then complete this process of deciding by putting my money where my mouth is, like which subnets am I going to operate on? Where am I going to risk my tau for the greatest return? And because it's all based on this incentive mechanism of like, you know, where can I earn the most tau for the tau I hold today? Once dynamic tau comes out, the best possible returns you're going to get is by hammering the subnet that goes up the most, the earliest, you know, from the conversion of your tau to the subnet token. This then creates this whole, and you can talk about the market mechanisms that'll go across the 32 subnets, like till the cows come home. But in the end, essentially, like you have to risk something now in order to earn your tau. And you have to lose something if you're going to take your subnet token out and handicap your own emissions every time you cash out, essentially, from a subnet, even if you're just going to convert it to your subnet token to a different subnet token, you still lower your effectiveness within that single subnet. And you have to make the hard choice of doing that. Right now, there's no hard choice. The problem right now is that if I put my emissions the same across every subnet, I earn the same amount of tau. As a validator, it doesn't matter. I could put all my emissions on one subnet. I could take all my emissions off the network. In that case, everybody would earn less tau. But in the future, the mechanism is much more pure. It does open up all kinds of issues like, oh, someone could launch a subnet and then, you know, earn a bunch of tau and do a really good job market, earn a bunch of subnet token, do a really good job marketing, and then rug the whole subnet. Okay, like that's going to mean that the subnets that are supported are going to be run by reputable shops like News Research or Mog or people who have established reputations, and everything will work itself out over time. But this is what I'm talking about with the training wheels coming off.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good point. That last one that you made is sure, there are just like in another ecosystem like Ethereum, there are, you know, bad projects that launch early in the early days, but ultimately the market figures out, you know, what are the good projects and flocks to those. Could you touch on, is there any opportunity cost associated with taking your TAU and delegating it to a certain subnet? Do you lose any amount of upside in that TAU?
Yeah, there's certainly a risk there, because like there's going to be a second version of the basically the dynamic TAU proposal that has been put forth now, the Bit1 proposal. It doesn't include anything for the average retail investor to basically do like an index fund investment and just put it all out there equally on the subnets. That'll come out eventually, but that'll be a, you know, the emissions there will be nerfed. So you're not going to be able to earn as much as you would be if we're doing what you're talking about, which is buying a subnet token. Hypothetically, like if you take 100 TAU and you put it into a subnet, and then the speed of the participants in that subnet turning their subnet token into TAU, which lowers the subnet emissions, increases like after you do that. When you try to get out of that subnet, then you're going to get less than 100 TAU back. So this is the risk that you're taking. This is why an average retail investor is like freaking out, because I just want my 20%, my 15% APR, the safe APR. For what? Like, what are you contributing? This is like, it goes back to every project that's been like, you know, everything from Strong Block to Ohm to whatever other thing that everyone like, you know, made a bunch of money on or lost a bunch of money on a couple of years ago. BitTensor isn't that. Like, we need to get away from that. The whole bootstrapping of the crypto Twitter universe that built this project like needs to change into something that doesn't use risk-free APR to create buy-in for the project, you know? And that's like the hard truth that everyone is going to have to swallow. And there's other hard truths. Like the other thing that you'll see happening at some point is validators will earn way, way, way less TAU than they do today. And the reason for that is because the network is going to have to evolve into a position where the monetization of the access to the miners through the validators will overtake the amount of TAU that you can earn as a validator. And that has to happen in order to basically make the whole ecosystem work. Because right now it's like you said, it's almost like we said it earlier in the podcast, but like buying into this ecosystem now and early in order to like get the, in order for it to earn its valuation, the subnets must start producing things of value, and the things of value must be accessed through the validator. And the real emission, the TAU emissions, the best place for them is the mining side, because that is where you incentivize the highest competition for providing that intelligence. The validators are just like the access point, you know? So if you have too much weight on the validators and too much TAU flowing into the validation mechanism and then the stakers that are on the validators themselves, you're almost throwing it away. You know, you're using TAU that could be used as a carrot to improve the mining, basically to just like, don't sell your TAU, keep it on your validator, you know, type carrot. And that's fine up to this point, but that's got to go away. We're big enough now. We've got actually a couple subnets that are introducing different models for validators to open up the access to the miners through a built-in API key that's in the subnet itself. And what you'll be able to do as a validator is go to different businesses out there in the world and sell them access to these miners through this API key. And the subnets that start doing that at a level where you're generating real income will then usher in an entirely new set of rewards distribution, much different than the 18 to the subnet owner, 41 to the miner, and 41 to the validator that we have today.
I mean, I think that makes perfect sense. And like, maybe if you applied this to the metaphor of like a football team, right? You have like the miners are ultimately the offense, right? Where like the stuff that is actually being resolved is being done, whereas the validators are just checking that the work is good, right? And so ultimately, if we want to be solving things that are useful, the miners are really the ones that need to come in and do a good job. And I I'm just curious, also wanted to get your take on how you think about there's something that we always get asked when we do our own like quarterly webcasts with our investors, and they're always really curious about emissions, right? How sustainable are emissions? Like, sure, this is a, we always talk about how it's a bootstrapping mechanism to get everybody to the table to start working. And then eventually, you know, the idea is with multiple halvenings and eventually some a well enough working network that you should have, you know, enough paying customers. This is also something that Arash loved to talk about when we talked to him. Do you have a sense of like where we are in the journey for BitTensor to get to that place where it is sort of a self-sustaining network?
Yeah, like, and I'll be just totally honest here. The 7,200 tau per day at $600 a tau, everyone's making money. The miners are doing well. The validators are doing well. Anyone that's staking is doing well. And there's a lot of fat left in there that could be trimmed before we start getting into a territory where we're having trouble incentivizing the current mechanisms of basically driving the way the network, you know, works today. You know, there's a couple different mechanisms from like a emission standpoint that are interesting with BitTensor. So the 7,200 tau per day, a percentage of that is burned. So there's like the halving has moved out several weeks over, like, I think it's almost 200,000 tau that has been burned up to this point. Someone's actually tracking this. I believe it's on Tau Stats now, but it's constantly pushing out the halving date, because every time you register a validator or miner for a subnet, or you do a transaction on the network of transferring Tau, you actually burn a little bit of Tau. So that's happening. That's cool. That'll continue to happen and you know, be a mechanism for essentially increasing and lengthening, pushing out the tail, right, of the halving. Yeah, the other thing that's happening is that you also have a pretty consistent like reduction in the APR. You know, like if you were paying attention to what you're earning as a staker on the BitTensor network, like your stake is only keeping pace with like one third, maybe a little bit less of, because remember, you're earning 41% of the emissions as a validator, and then you only get, as a staker, you're only getting 82% of that, right? So you're getting like roughly 30% of every tau that's coming out is going into the hands of the stakers. And if you look at that, like 7,200 tau being added to the pool of existing tau, that means every day you're falling behind a little bit of the position that you held in the network previously. And this is, in other words, this is called dilution, right? And so what you're counting on is that the acquisition or the interest to hold and acquire tau by the market is going to keep pace with this. If you look at the BitTensor chart, like if you go pull up like CoinGecko, or, you know, you can go to Tau Stats and look at the volume. You know, if you look at the volume from like 3 months ago, I think we're like 10x what the volume was. It's a pretty ridiculous amount. And then if you go to CoinGecko, I think we're like, you know, top 25 or we're top 30 or something now. I don't know. I don't look at it every day, but I do know that the volume of trading that is happening above and below projects in, you know, in the mid 20s where BitTensor sits is in the hundreds of millions of dollars. BitTensor consistently is under 30 million per day. Sometimes it's 20 million. There's a couple other projects in like the top 50 that are having that like very low liquidity and low trading amount. But all that means is people aren't selling tau. It means that you're not seeing these like washing, this trade washing stuff that's happening, because they're 90% of the tau is staked. So anytime anyone gets their hands on any tau, they just take it off the market. And then it only slowly flows back in based on this, you know, mechanism of the 7,200 tau per day. But if you compare that to the price and what we're trading at per day, and the 20 million we're trading at per day, and what other projects are doing, like, I don't think we're even close to where we should be with the price. And even though what I'm telling you about, like, we have a lot of fat left in where the price is at now versus what it actually costs to mine or validate on the network, I still think we're very early. This is not investment advice, you know, but like, just go look at it. Look at the numbers. We're like missing a zero on the trading volume. And like from a validator perspective, people might be thinking like, well, what does it cost to run a validator and how much do you earn? Like as a validator, we only spend like less than 0.5% of what we earn on equipment costs. And the rest is my time and the rest is free. Like essentially what you're paid for is the 99% that you're earning like in profit needs to be used then to basically choose the right subnets and take that and also find ways to take the 18% that the validators get and feed that back into the ecosystem to solve some of the problems that exist today, like weight copying or, you know, some of the bandwidth issues that we have on subtensor on basically the blockchain layer, which is creating a scaling question at this point. So there's like a few different issues with the network at the moment, but there's so much like I said, fat available to put towards these things. And I see people doing it myself. I'm also doing it. I just offered the other day $100K to someone to anyone that fixes weight copying. Like I have enough money to fix this thing. And not me personally, but running the validator, you know, like I have enough delegators now that I can take a very small percentage of our emissions and funnel it back into the ecosystem. And that's why you're seeing this thing grow at a rate that's like so outsized compared to other projects. Like I have another blockchain project I'm involved in. I'm only involved in two. It's been around for like 6 years. It's moving at like 1/100th of the speed of this project. And every day it's just like, they're trying to sell these partnerships and like who's building on the ecosystem. And it's nuts because it's just so sad. But you go into BitTensor and it's like, and there's like six things launched yesterday. Because everyone's just like, throwing money around, like AI ML researchers, like Noose Research are coming in off the street, like based on meeting people randomly at an AI conference and spinning up subnets. And they have, Noose Research has like 5,000 AI ML engineer-ish people in their Discord. They're a 50-person team, but that's just the top crust of the people that are like within Noose Research, you know? And there's other companies, I don't even know if I should mention their name, that I know are like launching on BitTensor and that have things running on the test net now. And it's just gonna keep happening. And like I said, also there's this other mechanism too, where like, if you look at the wallets, like go look at the top wallets in BitTensor, you can look at them in Tau stats, nobody sells. Like, and I'm in a couple of chats with guys that hold quite a bit of Tau like I do. Nobody's selling because everybody knows like sort of what they're holding. They've seen this thing like, and this is like stupid Twitter stuff, but it's like, know what you hold, you know, I'm not the same as you or whatever everyone says all the time. But like, I hate to say it, but it's freaking true with BitTensor. I'm sorry, but it's true. You know, and we have our problems, but go look at all the big wallets. They could all dump 20 million and like not really be hurt that bad, and nobody's doing it. And why not? It's because every time you dump a little bit, someone picks it up and doesn't sell it.
So in a nutshell, if I had to summarize, you're saying we should close down our hedge fund, divert all resources to come in the BitTensor.
What it comes down to is like, I think the world is going to put its money into diverting the future from a dystopic McDonald's AI where, you know, one corporation or three corporations determined how everybody gets all their information from these large centralized models. Nobody wants that. Bitcoin's been like chipping away at this problem from the economy side for now almost 15 years, like convincing people that you don't want these people controlling the monetary system. You want control of it yourself. Look at the price of Bitcoin, like it's starting to gain traction again. We're coming possibly into another very favorable market for projects like BitTensor. But in the end, I think people are going to, especially when you start getting things in your house that you can go buy on the open market that are less than, like, you don't have to pay Lambda $50K to build you a rig. You know, you can go off the street and get something for $5,000-$10,000 that you can run in your own house, your own AI that you're training off of a project like BitTensor that isn't RLHF'd up the yin yang so that you can't even get any like real text out of it that you want. And that thing's educating your children. Like, you need to have control of not just your keys, but also your intelligence. And when people understand this, and they will, then projects like BitTensor, like, I don't know if it's going to be BitTensor. I think it is, because I don't see anything else out there like it. Granted, we have a lot of things to work on, but projects that pull us away from that future are going to succeed.
That's great. I love that little bit. Have to have control of not just your keys, but also your intelligence. So I want to give you a chance also, because I want to hear about CA. I'm going to refrain from actually pronouncing it because I embarrassed myself at the beginning. But I would love to hear about the subnet that you've just launched. I think it's subnet 24. You know, what's the goal? How are you designing it? How are you thinking about it?
Yeah, so the idea behind this subnet comes from a dream that I had. And you could, I won't go into the whole thing, but you can listen to a podcast that I did on it a couple weeks ago, Cellular Automata, and catch up to that whole, the whole origin story. The long-term prospects for this subnet is to create a source for computational intelligence within BitTensor. So there is this, something called the synthetic data pipeline. This is what subnet 18 does when it brings in data from OpenAI's ChatGPT, or eventually Gemini or Anthropic, or wherever we're getting the data from the larger models. There are sources that are available computationally to basically provide things that that large language models aren't good at, that you can use to train models specifically to make them good at numbers, logic, computation. So our subnet uses cellular automata, something that is computationally irreducible, meaning that you don't know after 1,000 steps what it's going to come up with unless you run those 1,000 steps. There's no shortcuts. This is proven. And there's also, there's infinity, but call it trillions of different ways that you can have a unique starting pattern and a unique rule set that is applied to a cellular automata array to essentially generate novelty and complexity. And we're going to use that on this subnet as the incentive mechanism by creating something that miners can't fake unless they do the work. And then in order to do that work, they're also going to have to be good at this computational layer that can be used to not only assess, but also create databases, open source databases to train models on becoming better at doing math. That's, if you boil it all down, that's what it is. On a little more spiritual or woo level, the subnet is being also created basically to find a glitch in the matrix, because what I believe is that, and you can go look at some of the stuff that Stephen Wolfram does. In fact, I got this book that I'm working through, 1,200 pages of cellular automata Bible. If you're not familiar with Wolfram research, these guys are, on the cutting edge of cellular automata and have been for, decades, thanks to their kind of leader, Stephen Wolfram, who fell into a deep dark hole and never climbed out. And if you listen to the Lex Friedman podcast episodes with him, you can learn more about his views on it. But what I believe is that based on this dream that I had, is that deep within the, the irreducible complexity of cellular automata, that billions and billions of calculations deep on a rule set and starting pattern that nobody has computed yet, because there are, like I said, trillions that nobody's even worked on yet, that there's something there. And I don't know exactly what it is, but I can see the signs of it when I look at some of the output from cellular automata that's already been done. I can see that there's something there. And the only thing I can tell you is that we're going to find out through this subnet. And we're going to use the distributed compute and the incentive mechanism within BitTensor to not only do this digging into the, you know, the deep sea fishing for novelty in this computation, but we're also going to use it to bring into the network computational intelligence in the same way that we do today with chatbot intelligence from these generalized large language models like OpenAI's ChatGPT.
Very interesting. What do you ask the miners to optimize for, or what job do you ask them to run? So, like, I guess what I'm saying is, like, how do you validate that they've done a good or bad job?
Yeah, what we do today is we have written, you know, our own software to generate cellular automata arrays in a very simplified manner, where you have a, you know, you essentially determine the size of the field and you're generating zeros and ones in sequence. You start with, you know, a one at the top in the middle, for example, and then based on a rule that you apply to that, you know, look up Conway's Game of Life if anyone's confused, and you'll get a better idea for what cellular automata can do. So you take this, you know, this cell at the top, this one at the top of this array, which is just a checkerboard of zeros and ones, and you apply a certain rule set to that one, and then that births below it another, you know, one and a zero and a one and in a certain pattern, and you apply the same rule set to that. What we do is we tell the miners is take this starting array, take this rule set, run it for a certain number of steps, come back and give me the result. As a validator, I do the same thing, and we'll see if you get it right. We use randomization then to keep the ability for miners to just like run all this stuff in the background or previously, and then just pull it from a database so that they can't cheat. And the nature of cellular automata, like I said, is computational irreducibility, so there are no shortcuts to the final answer. The idea eventually is to use this mechanism to have these miners run hundreds of these at the same time using a GPU. Right now we're CPU. We basically did like a launch and learn. So we're starting pretty, you know, in an elementary way. Eventually they'll be running hundreds of these things, you know, millions of them per day, and generating a database that can be used to train a model to identify novelty and complexity in the output of the arrays themselves. So right now, like when you look at these things, cellular automata has classifications from 1 through 4. 1 is like you start it and it dies immediately. 2 is like you start it, it goes for a little bit and then dies. 3 is like it's random. 4 is like it's creating some type of pattern that is like almost containing something that you would never expect that a very simple like computer program with just a couple lines in a unique rule set could generate. But what we're trying to do is then create a model that can identify the, without having to have humans look at a picture of it, that can identify trends in the output of these arrays. So you're looking for like signal basically in the noise of all of these millions of arrays that are going to be generated using these unique starting patterns and unique rule sets. Right now, like with some of the research I've done on it, you know, you can see that you'll find like one of these nuggets, like one of these rule 4, one of these like classification 4, these like very complex, novel, like computational, essentially arrays, only happen like 1 out of every 10,000 times, depending on the rule set. So, but nobody ever runs every single rule set. So we're going to do something that has never actually been done before in the history of like the world, you know, and we're going to be using the compute of BitTensor to do that while at the same time bringing value to the ecosystem. So that's our strategy. It's a cool one. It's also, I got to tell you, like, even though I have a position in the ecosystem where people might be thinking like, oh, you could just, you know, you have friends, of course you can start a subnet. Like, we're going to lose our second subnet slot this week. I guarantee it. Like, I tried once to launch, our code wasn't ready. We lost that one. We launched this one. We got a couple hundred miners up and running. We fixed our distribution. So we're looking pretty good on miner participation. Turns out like me digging for, you know, the glitch in the matrix doesn't get everyone else excited from a validator perspective. So like, that's why we're introducing the next version of the code base that's going to, you know, bring in this additional intelligence on top of the incentive mechanism that uses CA to contribute value in the form of a synthetic data pipeline that can not only generate data sets, but birth another subnet, just like subnet 6 does for subnet 18.
Awesome. Well, Keith, we're coming up on time here. I don't want to, you know, take up all your time. This has been an absolute masterclass in BitTensor. Really appreciate you taking the time. Thank you so much.
Yeah, man, it's been good. Awesome questions. Thanks for letting me, you know, rant. And I ran out of milk this morning, so my coffee was like rocket fuel. So I don't know how much like yelling I did. My dogs aren't whining. Sometimes if I get too fired up, I hear the dogs whining, so it must have been okay. But yeah, thanks for having me on, guys. I love that you have people on from the ecosystem and are interested in the space, and sounds like you're participating in it yourself. So I love to have guys like you with BitTensor because it strengthens everything we're doing. So keep doing what you're doing as well.
Thank you. It's great talking to you, Keith.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
This content is provided for informational and educational purposes only and should not be relied upon as financial, legal, or tax advice. Prior to making any investment decision, you should consult with professional financial, legal, and tax advisors to determine the appropriateness of the risks associated with such an investment. No assurance can be given that the objectives of a particular investment will be achieved or that an investor will receive a return of all or part of his or her investment. All investments involve the risk of loss, including the loss of principal. In no event shall Plaintext Capital Management LLC, Plaintext, or any of its affiliates be responsible or liable for the correctness of any material discussed herein or for any damage or lost opportunities resulting from the reliance upon such material. References in this podcast to any specific securities or digital assets are for illustrative purposes only and do not constitute an investment recommendation or offer to provide investment advisory services. Furthermore, this content is not directed at nor intended for use by any investors or prospective investors. Plaintext and/or its clients may maintain positions discussed on this podcast. Certain information discussed or presented in this podcast may have been obtained from third-party sources. While taken from sources believed to be reliable, Plaintext has not independently verified such information and makes no representations about the enduring accuracy of the information or its appropriateness for a given situation. Any projections, estimates, forecasts, targets, prospects, and/or opinions expressed during this podcast are subject to change without notice and may differ or be contrary to opinions expressed by others.